You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all the Major League Baseball, and I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. On today's episode, which is being dropped on the 23rd day of June, I'm going to give lip service to the supposed agreement, and then, because of a request from one of our listeners, I'm going to recreate the 1995 World Series as if it was an all-Ohio affair. This podcast is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts, including Google, including, where is it, Stitcher. I think we're on Apple Podcasts, all the places. You know how to listen to podcasts. You're listening to one right now. Maybe you're on the website. You're listening to us directly at lockedonmlb.com. When you're staying at home during these trying times, make sure to tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net. Follow us on Instagram at LockedOnMLB. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Okay, I will mention this because it's news that the Commissioner of Baseball is going to unilaterally begin a season that will start in late July. Spring training will start in about a week on July 1st. 60-game regular season starting the weekend of July 24th. I don't believe that's going to happen because, as I've stated before, and I'll state again, and this is the thing that must always be stated over and over again, it's quite simple. The games were not stopped because of a labor dispute. The games were not stopped because of management versus the players. The games were stopped because of COVID. And COVID's still going on. In fact, it's going on pretty strong. And I'm seeing more and more people I know who either have it, who are losing their parents. And I know three people right now off the top of my head who have lost their parents because of it. It's still out there. It's still killing people. It's still affecting people. And no agreement or no amount of grab ass being played by Tony Clark and Rob Manfred will change the fact that that's why the games were stopped. Spring training will start on July 1st, and it will be canceled by July 7th. Broken record here, folks. This is, I don't want to keep saying it over and over again, but facts haven't changed. And they should be taking the time to bang out a collective bargaining agreement from 2021 and beyond. And realize that 2020, to the fault of nobody in baseball, is over. Much like there will be no Stanley Cup awarded, much like there was no March Madness, no Masters, no NBA Finals. It's just what happened. So this nonsense of baseball being started on July 24th, I'd like there to be. You don't think I want to be talking about baseball games? It makes these podcasts a heck of a lot easier to fill up if we got games. I see nothing to make me think that this will actually happen. But I'm not going to dwell on that today. Do you know why? Because I want to have some fun. Let's have some fun today. Let's forget about all the anxiety and all that. Let's just try to have a little bit of fun. Have a little bit of this being a respite here. Now, I have occasionally used whatifsports.com to recreate games or recreate series and have stuff that never really happened and see what would have happened if they did. And Garrett Mann, who is a follower of here, he's at movie_man98. And Garrett Mann wrote to me a couple weeks ago, actually, will you do a what if the Reds beat the Atlanta Braves in the 1995 NLCS and advance to the World Series? Well, Garrett, I'd love to. I would absolutely love to. In fact, I did. I ran a bunch of simulations, and what I am going to be presenting today is pretty much close to what was the consensus of what would have happened if the Reds had defeated the Braves in the NLCS in 1995. Now, before you snicker at that, remember, the Cincinnati Reds were indeed swept by the Atlanta Braves in the 1995 NLCS. And here's a trivia question without looking it up. What Braves player won the MVP of that series? Send me your answer at Sully Baseball. But the fact that the Braves clobbered the Reds in that series and the idea, well, what would happen if the Reds won, is not as far-fetched as you would think. And let me explain to you why. The Reds lost the first two games in extra innings. In fact, they had a lead in the ninth inning of one of them. If the Reds had scored a run in the ninth or tenth inning of game one and in the ninth inning of game two, then they would have been up two games to none. And also remember, the Braves had a reputation of being choke artists at that time, losing the heartbreaking World Series to the Twins in 1991, losing a razor-thin World Series to the Blue Jays in 1992, and then blowing a series they had no business losing to Philadelphia in 1993. So the Braves were looked upon as chronic underachievers there. And if a bounce here or a bounce there in a 11-inning game in Game 1 and a 10-inning game in Game 2 at Riverfront Stadium, the Reds would have been up 2-0. And the Reds had a reputation of being a team. They won the World Series in 1990, defeating a mighty Oakland A's team. And while there was a lot of turnover, there were still a few faces left over on that Reds team from the World Series winner. Most noticeably, Barry Larkin, who won the MVP in 1995, and Hal Morris. They had a great season from, Reggie Sanders had a fantastic season for the Cincinnati Reds. Sorry, I had a little bit of a hiccup there, but I'm looking at baseballreference.com, the single greatest website in the history of the planet Earth. And they got solid seasons from Pete Shurik, from Ronnie Gant, from John Smiley, and even the likes of Jeff Branson and a young Brett Boone were big-time contributors. It was a strange team because there was a lot of players who were kind of passing through Cincinnati, like Santiago, like Gant, like Darren Lewis, like David Wells, and a couple other pitchers who just came in and only played one season in Cincy. But what if they won those first two games and squeaked out an NLCS victory? What if that had happened? And they would go play the Cleveland Indians in the World Series. Davey Johnson leading yet another team to the World Series. He had done so with the Mets. Now he did so with Cincinnati. And they were playing in Riverfront Stadium. So it felt a little bit like the Big Red Machine or the title team from 1990. But the Reds looked a lot different because they had those white hats and the sleeveless uniforms. So what would have happened if the 1995 World Series was an all-Ohio affair? Davey Johnson and the Reds, Mike Hargrove and the Cleveland Indians, Jim Bowden putting together the Reds team, and Hart putting together the team in Cleveland. What would have happened? Well, we're going to do that. But I need a little boost of energy. I need a little bit of, well, for the lack of a better word, I need a boost. And so I'm going to grab me a Built Bar. So hold on a second. I'm grabbing me a Built Bar right now. They are the best tasting protein bar ever. They're tasty. They got great flavors like this one right here. I got my chocolate raspberry. That's my favorite. German chocolate cake is fantastic. And do you know what's also a really great? Peanut butter brownie. All tastes great. They're soft. They're easy to chew. And they've got great flavors. But they're also great if you're a health-conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Take the peanut butter brownie here, please. You got 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs. It's easy for you to say. So let me tell you something here. Get yourself some Built Bars. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Okay, Game one of the World Series in Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati. Sure, the Indians won more games, but that's the way they did it back in 1995. Just flip-flopping, flip-flopping. National League, American League, National League, American League, home field advantage. Who knew why? David Wells got the start for the Reds. I bet you forgot he pitched for the Reds in 1995. He wouldn't join the Yankees until 1997. Oral Hershiser got the start for the Indians, coming off of his ALCS Most Valuable Player performance against the Seattle Mariners, and became part of an elite group that would win postseason MVPs with multiple franchises. Riverfront Stadium had a hard time filling up the NLCS. There was a lot of empty seats in real life in the NLCS against Atlanta, but it would be packed to the gills for the World Series. Do you know why? Lots of fans from Cleveland made the drive down, figuring out it probably would cost less to go down and buy a ticket at face value in Cincinnati than going to the scalpers wandering around Jacobs Field. David Wells worked around a Carlos Baeuga double in the first, and Reggie Sanders, who had an MVP-caliber season for the Reds, launched a homer off of Hershiser to put the Reds on the board in Game 1. The mighty Indians lineup answered in the third. A Kenny Lofton triple led off the inning. Baeuga again got a hit. This one scored Lofton. After Albert Bell was hit by a pitch, steady Eddie Murray ripped a two-run double into right center field. Tony Pena would also double, and the Indians opened up a 5-1 lead in Game 1. The Indians fans were rocking. The Reds fans were a little bit angry. And David Wells only lasted two innings. But pinch hitter Jerome Walton homered for the Reds, and relievers Dave Burba and Hector Carrasco held the Indians to a combined four shutout innings, allowing one hit and one walk as the Reds chipped away. Jeff Branson hit a two-run home run to cut the lead to 5-4. In the sixth, Ron Gant hit a game-tying shot, and then Benito Santiago clobbered a tape-measure home run to give the Reds a 6-5 lead. The Indians put the tying run in scoring position in the 7th, 8th, and 9th, but the Reds' bullpen wiggled out of trouble with Jeff Brantley retiring Albert Bell on a grounder. The Reds fans in the house roared, and Cincinnati was up 1-0 with a 6-5 Game 1 final. The Reds had images of a 2-0 series lead reminiscent of their sweep in 1990 dancing in their heads. The Indians were still looking for their first World Series game won since 1948. Remember, they got swept in 1954. Would the Indians' offense, shut down so badly by the Cincinnati bullpen, wake up? In a word, yes. The Indians scored two runs before Smiley could even record an out. RBI hits by Omar Vizquel, Carlos Baeuga, Jim Thome, and Sandy Alomar put a four spot in the first, and John Smiley was reeling. They kept the pressure all game, and Smiley only lasted three innings, which was one better than David Wells. Tim Pugh of the Reds took it for the team, getting battered for four innings, giving the much beleaguered and worn-out Reds bullpen the night off. Carlos Baeuga got four hits, driving in six. Manny Ramirez homered twice. Every member of the Indians' starting lineup got two hits, except for pitcher Dennis Martinez, who went the distance as the Indians humiliated the Reds 19-2 and sent the series back tied to Jacobs Field. While the crowd was split in Riverfront between Reds and Indians fans, there was no doubt that the packed house in Jacobs Field was all Cleveland. But Charles Nagy was shaky out of the gate. Ron Gant's two-run double put the Reds up two before the Indians could bat. But Pete Shorrock allowed two runs of his own, and the game was knotted 2-2 after one. This was clearly not going to be a pitcher's duel. Eddie Taubensy homered for Cincinnati in the second, and Shorrock worked out of a bases-loaded jam. Nagy was pounded out of the game as Taubensy again, Mark Lewis, and Thomas Howard all doubled in the fourth, giving Cincinnati a 6-2 advantage. Kenny Lofton answered with a two-run homer in the fourth. In the fifth, Herbert Perry and Lofton doubled to tie the game at six. In the sixth inning, Manny Ramirez put the Indians ahead with a double, and Alvaro Espinoza drove in two, and Cleveland was up 9-6. Hal Morris smacked a two-run double to cut the lead to 9-8. Eddie Murray scored on a fielder's choice to give the Indians an insurance run, which they would need. The Reds rallied for a run off of Jose Mesa, but in the end, Mesa got Brett Boone to fly out, and the Indians took a wild 10-9 win for a 2-1 series lead. The Reds, desperate for any starting pitching, gave the ball back to David Wells, who flopped badly in the Game 1 slugfest. Ken Hill started for the Indians, allowing the Cleveland rotation to stay at full rest. Hal Morris's RBI single in the first gave the Reds an early edge, but Manny Ramirez's bases-clearing double gave Cleveland a 3-1 lead, and it looked once again like the Reds' starting pitching would get rocked. But Wells settled down, showing great control over six innings, walking only one batter. Mariano Duncan, the Reds' DH, connected for a three-run homer off of Hill in the fourth to give the Reds the lead. An Allen Embry wild pitch brought home another run. Ron Gant hit a seventh-inning home run, and the Reds were up 7-3. The Reds' bullpen of Hector Carrasco, Xavier Hernandez, and Jeff Brantley combined for three shutout innings, and Cincinnati took the 8-3 final to tie the series at two. No matter what, the series would go back to Cincinnati. Game 5 was a crucial swing game. Which team was going to go back to Cincinnati, needing only one more win to win it all? Ron Gant of the Reds singled home Barry Larkin in the first, and the Reds felt like they could put Cleveland on their heels. But it was Kenny Lofton again. He tripled to lead off the game for the Indians, to lead off the bottom of the first, that sparked a three-run Indians rally. Jim Thome broke out of a series-long slump to crush a home run into the right field stands to give the Indians a 4-1 lead. By the time Carlos Baerga led off the seventh with a home run to extend the lead to 6-2, Oral Hershiser had enough to work with. He threw a complete game victory, allowing one earned run and one unearned run for a 7-2 final. Cleveland would go back to Cincinnati with a chance to clinch in Game 6, and no doubt plenty of Indian fans were going to make the trip. Riverfront Stadium was packed, and it seemed like a 50-50 split with the crowd roaring on each pitch. Dennis Martinez took the mound for Cleveland, making his bid for series MVP. Pete Shurik, looking to redeem his poor showing in Game 3, hoped to push the series to a seventh game. If the Reds would win, it would be anyone's guess who starts Game 7. They had business to attend to in Game 6. Benito Santiago homered in second to give the Reds an early 1-0 lead. Baerga answered with an RBI double to tie the game in the third. It was Santiago again connecting off of Martinez, this time with a double, and he scored on a Brett Boone hit. Ron Gant's home run gave the Reds a 3-1 lead in the fifth. Manny Ramirez drove home Albert Bell with an RBI hit, but Pete Shurik got Jim Thome to pop up to end a six-inning rally. Shurik also worked out of trouble in the seventh and the eighth, and Cincinnati clung to a 3-2 lead. Reds manager Davey Johnson went to his closer Jeff Brantley for the ninth. Brantley had been unscored upon in his three World Series appearances, and now the Reds were three outs away from forcing a Game 7. Indians pinch hitter Herbert Perry led off the ninth with a single. Kenny Lofton walked, moving pinch runner Wayne Kirby to second. Then it happened. The moment that everyone remembered from this World Series that didn't really happen. Omar Vizquel, hit a lazy fly ball to center field that clanked off the glove of Thomas Howard. Kirby scampered to third in the chaos that ensued, and the Indians had loaded the bases with nobody out. Baerga popped up for the first out. A double play could still end the game, but Albert Bell split the outfielders with a drive to left center field. Kirby, Lofton, and Vizquel, who reached on the Thomas Howard error, all scored on the double, and the Indians were now up 5-3. Brantley would get Eddie Murray and Manny Ramirez out, but the Reds were stunned and now just three outs away from elimination. Jose Mesa, who, lest we forget, was unhittable for the Indians in 1995, took the mound with a 5-3 lead. Jeff Branson weakly grounded to short. Pinch hitter Jerome Walton struck out. And then Thomas Howard, the GOAT of the game, back then GOAT was a bad thing, came to bat with hoping to redeem himself from the error. It didn't happen. He grounded softly to Baerga, who threw to Paul Sorrento. The Indians were the champs. For the first time since 1948, Cleveland won the World Series. Cleveland finally had a champion, their first since the 1960s when the Browns won. Instantly, this crew became the most beloved Cleveland team of all time. Veterans like Eddie Murray, Dennis Martinez, and Oral Hershiser all contributed. Homegrown stars like Manny Ramirez, Jim Thome, and Albert Bell got huge hits. But the front office and John Hart could point to players acquired or stolen from other organizations. Jose Mesa from the Orioles, Carlos Baerga and Sandy Alomar from the Padres, and World Series MVP Kenny Lofton from the Astros. Lofton batted .494 with an OPS of 1.144 in the series. Meanwhile, in Cincinnati, the Reds were quickly disbanded. Davey Johnson was let go after 1995, and the Reds wouldn't put another contender on the field till the end of the decade. But both Ohio teams had won a title in the 1990s, and that was something that hadn't happened since the 1940s. So hey, there you go. The Reds put up a fight. They forced it to six games, but Garrett, man, your Reds couldn't beat the Indians. But you still have 1990, and hey, two pennants in that decade, at least in this parallel universe that I created. So there may not be real games being played, but I'll have plenty of fake games. And if there's a series you want me to do, send it along. But I'll tell you one that I may do, and if you're interested in hearing this, let me know. I want to replay through What If Sports the 1994 postseason. The last time we didn't have a World Series, that was for labor issues. That shouldn't have happened. This is a different story. So go to the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. Go to all the places where you get your podcasts and listen to Locked On Fantasy Baseball, hosted by Scott Cullen. This is Locked On MLB for the 23rd day of June, 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.